Hello from VOA Learning English, and welcome to As It Is Weekend. This is the Sunday edition of our free, daily 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. It's February 14th, 2016. You won't hear our regular Sunday programs, Economics and Business, and Words and Their Stories, today. They'll be back next week. Why won't you hear them? We have a special program today. Why is it special? Today's program is special because February 14th is Valentine's Day, a day for lovers. We'll tell you the interesting history of the day. Then Anna Mateo will be here to tell us about the power of touch. The sense of touch is basic to all humans. It can keep us healthy. And most importantly, touch connects us to other humans. Today, Anna will tell us a personal story about touch for Valentine's Day. And as we do every Sunday here on As It Is, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week, we tell the story of the return of a former American president from a long trip to Africa and Europe. Hundreds of thousands of people gathered in New York City to welcome the much-loved Theodore Teddy Roosevelt home. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal. And we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. Happy Valentine's Day! Americans celebrate the holiday each year on February 14th. So do candy companies, jewelry stores, and people selling flowers. Valentine's Day is for lovers. It is a good day to ask your girlfriend or boyfriend to marry you. It is also a popular day for marriage ceremonies. And some couples celebrate the day with dinner at a nice restaurant. The holiday is named for Saint Valentine. He was a Christian clergyman who was said to have helped young lovers. Valentine was executed for his Christian beliefs on February 14th, more than 1,700 years ago. But the day that has his name is even older than that. The ancient Romans celebrated a holiday for lovers more than 2,000 years ago. As part of the celebration, each girl wrote her name on a piece of paper and put it in a large container. Each boy reached into the container and pulled out the name of a girl. That girl became his girlfriend for a year. Lovers still put their names on pieces of paper on Valentine's Day. They send each other cards that show their love. Sometimes they send other gifts too, like jewelry or flowers or candy or all three. So Valentine's Day is, as we say here in the United States, big business. The National Retail Federation is a trade group. It represents retail stores in the United States and other countries. It says almost 55% of American consumers will celebrate Valentine's Day this year. They will spend an average of $146.84 on flowers, jewelry, candy, and clothing. The group expects total spending on Valentine's Day items to be $19.7 billion this year.
Take two lonely hearts, add a little moonlight. Soon you'll find your eye up in the sky on the wings of love. Take three little birds, add a special moment.
The sense of touch is basic to all humans. Touch can keep us healthy, and touch connects us to other humans. For Valentine's Day, here is Anna Mateo with a personal story about the power of touch.
What is your first language? French? Chinese? Russian or English? How about none of the above? The first language of all humans is touch. In the womb, we begin touching our face in an effort to learn about ourselves. As infants, we are calmed and soothed by our mother's touch. Through all stages of our lives, we are comforted, we are helped by touch. Students who receive a supportive touch participate more in class. Athletes have better games if they receive a high five or a slap on the back from a teammate. Clinical studies done over the years have found that a loving touch can lower our blood pressure, reduce anxiety and stress, and raise the levels of our good hormones. Matt Hertenstein is an experimental psychologist at DePaul University in Indiana. He studies how touching can affect a person's physical and emotional health. Hertenstein has written many articles on the power of touch. He writes in a 2010 report that if a child does not have enough loving touches early in life, the brain does not grow to normal size. Also, the connections between neurons do not develop properly. In a recent interview with National Public Radio, Hertenstein said he found that loving touches can lower levels of cortisol, sometimes called the stress hormone, and raise levels of oxytocin, sometimes called the cuddle or bonding hormone. Even simple handholding causes levels of the stress hormone cortisol to drop. You don't have to be a researcher to know this. In his song, Human Touch, Bruce Springsteen sings about it.
I ain't looking for a prayer's a pity. I ain't coming round, sir. just want someone to talk to and a little of that human touch. Just a little of that human touch.
But besides studies and rock songs, I'm sure we all have stories about how a loving, caring touch helped to make a bad situation better. Here is my first-person story. It is a winter day, and I am walking home from work. It is cold and windy. I cross my arms against my body, trying to make myself warmer. My head points down against the wind. I curse myself for not wearing a warmer coat. The pavement goes by quickly under my feet as I think about my undone work waiting for me on my computer. I think about the mistakes I made and what I could have done better. I remind myself to pay the bills. I think about what I'm going to cook for dinner. Taking inventory in my mind, I worry. There are no fresh vegetables in my house. None. Not even a pea. I need to shop. My mind is miles and miles away. Then I notice her. She is walking in front of me on the sidewalk. Well, she is not really walking, more like shuffling along in her house slippers. Her back is hunched over. She is not wearing a coat, and her short gray hair is messy. As I pass her, she turns and smiles. Her smile lights up her face. I see that she is well into her 80s, maybe even early 90s. And she is holding some letters in her hands. I walk on and arrive at the traffic light. Waiting there, I see the mailbox across the street. The light turns green for me to cross the street, but I pretend to check my phone and wait for her to catch up to me. In this neighborhood, even crossing with the green light is dangerous. Drivers often drive wildly through red lights and stop signs. When she reaches me on the sidewalk, we wait, side by side, for the light to change. I want to speak to her, but I'm not sure. People are often untrusting of strangers in the city, and rightfully so. But I turn to her and gently touch her on the arm. "Excuse me, ma'am, can I help you?" She smiles and answers in a language I do not understand. Is it Polish? Hungarian? It sounds Eastern European. But then she waves her hand as if to say, "We don't need to talk, my dear." She seems like the kind of woman who would call me dear. She takes my hand in hers and holds it. Her small hand is soft and warm. So now we're waiting hand in hand for the light to change. What might have felt awkward feels comfortable. The light changes and we walk together slowly across the street. I drop the letters in the mailbox and take her back across the street. When safely across, she says, "Thank you," in beautifully accented English, and waves goodbye. As I walk the rest of the way home, I can still feel the warmth of her hand in my own. I touch my hand to my cheek. As a cold wind blows across my face, I look up to meet it. The night sky is beautiful and the air is crystal clear. A baby waves at me from inside a passing car. I watch a clumsy squirrel jump onto a tree branch and miss. I laugh and laugh. Even as I write this, thinking of her, I can still feel her soft, warm hand in mine. I'm Anna Mateo.
Touch your dream.
Now, we present our popular weekly program, The Making of a Nation. Today, we take you back to June 18th, 1910. It was an exciting day for Theodore Roosevelt. It was the day that the former American president returned from a long trip to Africa and Europe. Hundreds of thousands of people gathered in New York City to welcome him home. There were speeches and bands and a parade. This week in our series, Frank Oliver and Tony Riggs tell us about that trip. And they tell us how political problems hurt Teddy Roosevelt's friendship with President William Howard Taft.
It was the perfect end to a trip that began 3 weeks after Theodore Roosevelt completed his presidency. Most of the trip was a huge success. In Africa, Theodore Roosevelt spent months hunting wild animals. He shot many lions, elephants, and other animals. He brought all of them back and gave them to the Smithsonian Institution. After hunting in Africa, he and his wife Edith went to Europe.
The Roosevelts visited Italy and met the king and queen. They visited Vienna and met the ruler of Austria and Hungary. In Germany, they met Kaiser Wilhelm II. Kaiser Wilhelm invited the former American president to watch a big parade of German troops. He told him, "You are the first civilian who has ever joined the Kaiser in reviewing the troops of Germany." The two men were photographed shaking hands. On the back of the photograph, the Kaiser wrote, "When we shake hands, we shake the world." The Roosevelts met the kings and queens of Norway, Belgium, and the Netherlands. They met the crown princes of Sweden and Denmark. And while in England, Mr. Roosevelt served as America's official representative at the funeral of King Edward VII.
Theodore Roosevelt made a number of speeches at several universities, including Oxford and the Sorbonne. Yet all these activities did not keep him from reading newspapers and letters from home. The news troubled him. He had led the Republican Party with great success. Now the party seemed to be falling apart. It had split into two groups. One group included conservatives who supported President William Howard Taft. The other group included progressives who opposed Taft. Theodore Roosevelt had worked hard to get William Howard Taft elected. President Taft had been in office a little more than a year. Yet, in that short time, he had broken almost completely with the progressives who had supported Roosevelt.
The split developed because progressives expected Taft to rule as Roosevelt had done, with energy and emotion. They wanted a man who could excite people with dreams of social progress. Theodore Roosevelt was such a man. William Howard Taft was not. He was a big, slow-moving man. He refused to make quick decisions. As a former judge, he depended on facts, not emotion, to make decisions. President Taft did much to carry out the reform programs Theodore Roosevelt had begun. but his methods led people to believe that he was really trying to kill the programs.
Taft wrote to Roosevelt shortly before the former president sailed for home. "I do not know if I have had harder luck than other presidents," he said, "but I do know I have succeeded far less than others. I have been trying to carry out your policies, but my method of doing so has not worked smoothly." A few weeks later, Theodore Roosevelt returned home. In a speech to those who welcomed him in New York, he said, "I am ready and willing to do my part to help solve America's problems, and these problems must be solved if this country is to reach the high level of its hopes." To President Taft, Roosevelt wrote, "I will make no speeches or say anything for 2 months, but I will keep my mind open as I keep my mouth shut."
President Taft invited Theodore Roosevelt to visit him at the White House. Roosevelt said he could not. However, he did meet with many of the progressive opponents of the president. Later, he met with Taft at the president's summer home in Massachusetts. It was not a happy meeting. The two friends were tense. By this time, Roosevelt had decided that he agreed with the progressives. He believed President Taft had turned back many of Roosevelt's policies.
Roosevelt decided it was time for him to go to the American people. He accepted an invitation to a celebration in Wyoming. He traveled west by train. He stopped in many towns and cities to make speeches. He spoke of party unity. He tried to heal the split that had weakened the Republican Party. But the policies he proposed were progressive. Conservatives refused to support them. President Taft could not understand Roosevelt's purposes. "If I only knew what he wanted," Taft said, "I would do it. But he has told me nothing. I am deeply wounded. He gives me no chance to explain my position or to learn his."
Theodore Roosevelt hoped his speaking trip would help Republican Party candidates win in the 1910 congressional elections. His efforts seemed to fail. Republicans were defeated in many states. For a year after the party's defeat in the congressional elections, Theodore Roosevelt remained silent. Then, near the end of 1911, America's political parties began to prepare for the presidential election that would be held the following year. Roosevelt was sure Taft could not be reelected. Taft had become very conservative. He had close ties to business interests. What the people wanted, thought Roosevelt, was a progressive president. What they wanted was a man like himself. So Theodore Roosevelt began to speak out again in opposition to many of the things President Taft was doing. For example, President Taft had proposed treaties with Canada, Britain, and France. Roosevelt criticized them.
Taft was troubled. He told a friend, "It is very hard to take all these blows from Roosevelt. I do not know what he is trying to do, except to make my way more difficult. It is very hard to see a close friendship going to pieces like a rope of sand. By now, it was clear to Taft that Roosevelt wanted to be the presidential candidate of the Republican Party in the election of 1912. Earlier, this would have pleased Taft. He would have been happy to leave the White House. But the situation was different now. Roosevelt had changed. Taft felt that the policies he proposed seemed too extreme. Taft decided it was his duty to oppose Roosevelt and the progressives. He would seek re-election. Taft believed he could win the Republican nomination for president. He still had the support of many party leaders.
4 months before the Republican nominating convention opened, several progressive Republican governors appealed to Roosevelt. They urged him to declare himself a candidate for president. Roosevelt, they said, was the man to lead the nation into a new era of social progress. Then Taft made a strong statement against the progressives. "They are seeking," he said, "to pull down the temple of freedom and representative government." A reporter asked Roosevelt to answer Taft's statement. Roosevelt said, "My hat is in the ring." That meant he was a candidate. Now the conflict was in the open, and Roosevelt was ready to fight.
In his speeches, Roosevelt criticized Taft bitterly, in a voice shaking with hatred. He said Taft was controlled by conservative politicians. He said Taft stood in the way of progress and was disloyal. Taft had to answer. In one speech, he said, "This tears my soul. I am here to answer an old and true friend who has made many charges. I deny all those charges. I do not want to fight Theodore Roosevelt, but I am going to fight him." After the speech, a reporter looked for the president. He found him sitting alone, his head in his hands. His eyes were filled with tears. "Roosevelt was my closest friend," Taft said. In the presidential election of 1912, Teddy Roosevelt organized a new political party, the Progressives. He created the party after he failed to win the Republican presidential nomination. We will tell that part of our American story next week, here on The Making of a Nation on As It Is Weekend. This Making of a Nation program was written by Frank Beardsley. It was presented by Frank Oliver and Tony Riggs, and we thank them all. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. Next week, we'll bring you our regular Sunday programs, Economics and Business, Words and Their Stories, and Higher Education. Jonathan Evans will be with you tomorrow to start the week at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.